All right, we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome everybody to the Balancing Act. If this is the ship you're wanting to set sail on today, please stay. If not, please onboard the ship. No, you guys all stay. You're great. So, want to get started? Let's start with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father God, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here at Allegra this morning, Lord, to learn a little bit more about how we can take care of the earth and the place that you put us in. And Lord, I pray that you would just help this message to be a blessing to everyone this morning. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Well, my name is Chet, and this is Melissa, my wife Melissa, and we're from Northern Michigan is where our farm is. And we started our farm in 2017, and we planted 15 pounds of garlic on a property, on a family property that we had no house on or well on the property. And from the small start in 2017, we slowly expanded. And in 2023, this year, we increased our sales by 300% from the sales in 2022. And we doubled our time with family and friends. Now we sell, we're going to give you an idea. We're going to tell you actually the revenue that we brought in this year to give you an idea of what you can do with three farmers markets. 2017, we started with one farmers market. And 2023, we did three. We have one that we do May through October, and then the other two are June through August. We're also doing this while I continue to work full-time as an ER nurse. So understand you can farm and work full-time to an extent. Melissa continues to write for Acquainting Agriculture and also homeschool our two boys, which are sitting right over there. And today we're going to teach you how to find your niche, how to manage your time, and how to be successful part-time farmers.
So we thought we would start with kind of an overview to show you where we started to where we are now. So this chart just shows the amount of garlic that we planted. You can see down here we started in 2017 with 15 pounds. In 2018, we replanted everything that we harvested and purchased a little bit more seed. Garlic seed is very expensive, and so getting into it is expensive. In 2019, we replanted more and we purchased a little bit more seed. And you can see in 2020, we had a major drought that summer and every summer since, but we've learned how to deal with it. And our garlic just did not do well. We had very small heads and we had been experimenting with some varieties. And that year, we decided that we couldn't sell the stuff that we had, and we threw away half of our crop. We sold a little bit, and then we replanted in that fall. We planted 172 pounds. In 2022, we planted 275 pounds, and then this last fall, we planted 600 pounds. Which is a little bit crazy. You can see this is our property here in our house now. That's our garlic field, and it's full. So it's just over an acre of garlic. So this is our income. Our first harvest was in 2018, but we didn't sell anything. We replanted everything that we grew. We started making sales in 2019. And you can see here between 2022 and 2023, we tripled our income. We added our second market. So we started with just one farmer's market. In 2022, we added a second farmer's market. And in 2023 is when we picked up the third farmer's market.
So that's our revenue. So we brought in this year, we brought in about $23,000, but you're talking expenses. Currently our expenses are about 50%. Our income for dried seasonings. So this is our income in a breakdown. 51% of our sales are dried seasonings. 34% are fresh foods. 11% are garlic braids that we mix with dried flowers. It's a really popular thing, which you could do. And then miscellaneous classes, stickers, et cetera, is about 4% of the breakdown. So yeah, you can see with three markets, kind of just giving the idea of what you can do and kind of where those prices are. Because I find a lot of people are like, hey, we're living off the farm. It's like, hold on, this is kind of where we're at, just to give you an idea.
So we thought the best way to share would be to tell you our story and then to highlight some of the things that we've learned along the way. We kind of stumbled into farming and floundered about for a few years while we were figuring things out. yeah. And I think there's always an amount of floundering. We both grew up on hobby farms and we'd had gardens our whole life, but we really had no concept of what it took to grow a farm as a business, and we didn't know where to start or even what to grow. So we broke our talk down into three stages there, and we really believe that these things run in a continual cycle. But we have the envision stage. You always have to start with a plan or an idea. And we'll talk about researching and heart searching and making some plans. And then experimenting, getting started, learning to prioritize, learning to pivot. And then engage. This is where we're getting into monitoring our quality and working on our marketing and also working on reaching our community and really being a blessing to those around us.
So about a year after we were married, in 2015, we moved to Norridgewock, Maine. Anybody's been to Maine? It's where the little snowblowers do not cut it. We would get 3 foot of snow at a time. And so, yeah, we really learned how to push snow there. But we also decided to start working on learning how to grow different things. So this is microgreens under a 4 foot fluorescent light from Home Depot under a table next to our bed. All right, so this is where I started learning how to grow some microgreens. And there's some mighty sunflowers here, our first crop of sunflowers. And I grew so many microgreens, we couldn't eat them all. But I started learning how to do it. Then our landlord, because we were renting, said, we asked, can we grow a garden? She said, yes. So one of the church members actually tilled us up a garden. And we started growing more vegetables than we could even eat. So we said, let's add to the family. So this is Gavin. So he was born, and he was like to play in the dirt. So at that time, Melissa was the 5th through 8th grade teacher at Riverview Memorial School in Norridgewock, and they had a little farm there, a farm stand called the Country Cupboard. So we volunteered in the summertime with selling some of the products there, and this was the first time we had ever sold anything for anybody.
So every time I would get home and Chet wasn't at work, he was in the garden, and we were just really enjoying the time that we were spending out there. So we started researching. I was on maternity leave from my teaching job. I started reading as many books and blogs as I could about all different kinds of farming. And I think we just kind of had this idea that maybe this is what we want to do. So we started visiting farmers markets, and we'd look at the kinds of things that they were selling. We'd go early in the day and then go visit again late in the day as the markets were closing to see what were people actually buying as well. And when we decided that we were going to move back to northern Michigan to be near family, we started looking at what kinds of farms were already in the area that we would be moving to. And as the year went on, I started reaching out to different farmers near where we were still living in Maine to ask if we could come visit their farm and if they would tell us about what they were doing and things that were working for them and things that weren't working for them. So I don't remember the exact number of farms that we visited, but there were a few that stood out to us.
One is Penny Brin Lavender Farm, and they grow phenomenal lavender. Now, I don't mean just phenomenal, like that's the variety. It's an intermediate variety called Phenomenal Lavender. It has a really high oil content, and so they were distilling their oils and making salves and scrubs. We're like, man, we want to do lavender. So we read a bunch of books on lavender, but realized soon through that where we were going to be moving to had a lot of lavender farm. But after the lavender farm, the light bulb moment hit us when we met the Albert Einstein of organic growers named Mr. Tom Roberts. Now, this guy looks like he knows what he's talking about. So we went to his farm. He was super welcoming to us, and he showed us a bunch of things. He showed us that the community dumps all their grass clippings there, and when he knows that he composts it, and when he knows that the compost is ready because the grass clippings could have some herbicides in them, he plants a tomato plant in the compost. If the tomato plant dies, it's not ready. If it doesn't die because it's really susceptible to herbicides, then it's ready. So he showed us some things, and then he showed us the garlic, and I was like, what is this? I'd never seen a garlic plant that time. And he goes, oh, this is garlic. You plant it in the fall. You harvest it in July. And I said, okay, maybe this is something. So I went online and looked, and I could not find garlic. All the garlic was sold out. All the seed suppliers were sold out at the time. So maybe this is something. So we bought 15 pounds. We actually bought 25 pounds, 10 pounds. We sent it to MSU, and it didn't grow well. 15 pounds is what we really started with. And then we went from there. So what we want to kind of tell you guys is the first step is do your research. Attend farmers markets in your area if you can. And we attend a lot of farmers markets once we got to Michigan too to get a better idea. Go both early and late. See what kinds of things people are selling. See what the booths look like. What attracts you to them? What doesn't attract you to them? Look at the farms in your area. Is the market saturated? And where might there be openings? And what are these farmers doing to be successful? And then tour farms all over. Take notes. Ask yourself what is making them successful and what they could do better. But do this privately. Don't just tell them, like, I think you could do that better. And then consider your lifestyle. This is a really big one, especially when you're working another part-time job or full-time job. What works with what you're already doing? What kind of timelines are realistic for you? And can you sell your products right away, or do you need more flexible options? We found that like selling lettuce for us really wasn't a good option because a lot of times I'm working stretches, sometimes 7 days in a row, and it's really hard to be able to make sure to harvest and then sell that product at a timely manner. How or where are you going to sell your products? Are you willing to stay put year-round? Do you plan to travel? That's going to make a difference. You're selling at farmers markets or you're selling online. And what's a realistic sized operation for your family? Start small and grow as you experience success. Learn how to manage it. And that's really big. Don't start super big. Start small and grow as you experience success, and you'll learn how to manage it.
So in the summer of 2017, Gavin was a year old, and we moved into the in-law suite of Chet's parents' home, and we planted our first crop of garlic in the fall of 2017. And there's Gavin. This was the beginning of an adventure for us. Like we said, we didn't have a house on this property. We didn't have a well, but we planted anyways. We planted a garden the following spring. Where's my picture? We planted a garden the following spring, and we still didn't have water. So we were hauling water in a 40-gallon jug from my husband's parents' house over to our garden. I don't know that I would do it again. I was pregnant with our second that summer, and it was hot and long. But we successfully harvested what we grew from the 15 pounds. And, this is spring of 2018. You can see our little baby garlic crop. And we started building a hoop house and fencing in a garden.
Yeah, so in 2018, we harvested our first garlic crop. And then this was the crop that we harvested the first time. This is my truck. This is a 1999 Honda CRV. And so this is what we had available to us. So like I put bricks in the back, which barely handled for some things. And then we put garlic. You can use whatever you have. Just make sure you have a good vacuum. So once we had really gone to a lot of farmers markets that year in 2018 and harvested our garlic, we realized garlic was it wasn't sold very much in northern Michigan. So we said we're going to build a 5-year plan because we sold really well. And so that's when we built the 5-year plan. And you should always build a 5-year plan. Now you might change from it. You might realize, oh, this isn't going good 2 years in. Then you develop another 5-year plan. Don't just keep going with that same plan if it's not working. But you should have some sort of rough plan of what you want to do, your goals of how much you want to plant, how much you want to sell. So we wanted to so in 2018 we joined one market. Just get started. Now this, you don't have to have a whole lot of stuff to get started. We bought a tent and a folding table from Costco. The tent was like $250 or something like that. Not even. Banner and business cards from Vistaprint. We bought a tablecloth and folding chalkboard from Amazon. And then we bought a Square Reader. The cool thing about Square Reader, and I don't work for Square, but that we put all our sales in it, whether it's credit card sales or cash sales, and it tells us exactly what sales we're making every single week. And it keeps a really, really good track of that. So it is really helpful. So we started. Now, we had never sold anything like of our own in the past at all. So we're like, we're going to sell garlic scapes. Now, garlic scapes are right there. They're the seed pod head of a garlic plant. You clip them off in June so that the garlic focuses on the garlic bulb. We're like, we're going to sell these garlic scapes. Now, everybody just dumps them in a pile and is like, just buy garlic scapes at their market. We're like, we're going to separate them per variety. We're going to taste test these garlic scapes, and they're going to buy them. Well, like, I'm sure other farmers were like, what are these guys doing? Like, they're crazy. So we would pay $20 to go to market, and we would leave market in 4 hours selling $40 worth of product. like we weren't making any money, but we needed to just start somewhere and we needed to sell because we had never done it before. We had never marketed a product.
And that's baby number two. That's Noah.
So once the garlic was ready, we began selling and were able to sell out early that year. We focused on learning the best way to display our product in a unique way. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. We realized that garlic was a profitable product, and therefore we made that business plan. We did stretch our personal finances and continue to experiment in other areas, but at this point, we said whatever the garlic makes is how we're going to grow the garlic only if it makes us money. Like, we're not going to put our personal finances in it anymore at this point. And we never did again with the garlic.
So from here, I think we got a little excited because we branched out into all kinds of things. We watched the documentary, The Biggest Little Farm. If you haven't watched it, you should. It's great. We read the book Dirt to Soil by Gabe Brown. And then we decided to dive into the world of regenerative agriculture, which means we used Justin Rhodes' plan and we built a chicken tractor and bought 40 laying hens. And then we invested in a small starter flock of Katahdin sheep. We borrowed a truck and trailer, and we put them in Chet's parents' barn on their property when they were little. It was a lot of fun with the kids.
So I built a sheep shelter out of pallets. Now, I want you to understand all the things that I built here, I'd never built anything in my life. So if you think, if you're like, well, first of all, that doesn't look great, I understand. But if you're like, I can't build anything, believe me, I'd never built anything. And of course, we had to buy a Great Pyrenees guardian duck because everybody says on YouTube and all the books, they say you have to have a guardian duck. What they don't tell you is that your sheep are going to eat your guardian dog's food, so you got to figure out how to get the food away from the sheep. And they also don't tell you that the guardian dog likes to travel like miles away, and he'll just step right over the fence and just walk away during the day because he's like, oh, the sheep are fine. So we had to really figure out how to work all that. And so it's not as simple as everybody made it sound out. So it was very, very busy. We would move the sheep into a permanent pasture in the nighttime and then move them out into rotational grazing in the day. So by 2020, we were growing more and more garlic every year. You can see Melissa hanging garlic in the side. This is my parents' pole barn in the side of their barn to dry. So we would drive it over to their property and then hang it. And we were just increasing our garlic product every year. And the kids were getting bigger, needing more and more help. This is weeding garlic. Gets a little heavy at times. And we were continually improving the property. This is the sheep shelter, the permanent pasture that we built for the sheep. And we were practicing, like I said, rotational grazing. We'd bring them out in the daytime, move them back in, and then we'd move the sheep pasture every 2 days. And then we'd bring the chickens into the pasture after that. And all the bugs that would get on the sheep manure would eat those, and they would add to the soil. Actually, when we put the garlic crop into that area two years ago, it was the best garlic crop we'd ever had. We were also experimenting with composting. So this is our little house. We finally brought on the property in 2020. The end of 2020, we moved in, and we were still in 2020, still using a well.
We had a well, but we had no power to run the well, so we had a generator under a tarp to run the well.
And again, I had no idea how to hook up electric, so that was YouTube, and we figured that out. So between a full-time job as a nurse in the hospital, Melissa being an adventurous leader, still writing for Acquainting Agriculture, growing a personal garden, take care of all the animals, running farmers markets through the summer, and two small children, we felt we were getting stretched very, very thin. And so I'm going to show you just a little bit of the lambing of 2021.
So by the summer of 2021, we were completely overwhelmed. We had started the year with the 7 newborn lambs, and we were still practicing rotational grazing, which means moving everybody every few days with babies. We were still increasing the size of our personal garden. Don't ask me why. We grow way more than we need. The amount of garlic that we were growing was also increasing, and we were still trying to learn how to manage the large amounts of garlic, which meant we needed more time to clean, more time to harvest, more time to prepare for markets, And I had also just started experimenting with making dried herb salts and making garlic powder and those kinds of things. So we hit a point where we just knew we had to do something different. What we were doing was way too much and it wasn't going to work. So we made a decision that the livestock had to go. That was the thing that made sense to get rid of, because they weren't really losing us money, but they weren't making us any money, and it was so much work. So within a couple of weeks of making that decision, we sold all but a family-sized flock of chickens. We sold all of the sheep. We sold the livestock guardian. And we, right? And we took a deep breath and settled into our home that fall.
Don't worry about what people are going to say when you, like, cut something, because like 2 weeks before this I was like, yeah, we got the sheep and we got the chickens and guard dog. And then I talked to, it was actually my brother, 2 weeks later, and he's like, so how's it going? I'm like, we sold the sheep, sold the chickens, sold the guardian dog. He's like, well, you know what happens. But we need to cut something to be able to continue and increase the farm, right? So experiment, figure out what your priorities are, and keep first things first. Start small, take little wins, and grow from them. And don't stress yourself out too much in the beginning and taking on too much. Right? And if you need to make cuts, make cuts. Don't be afraid to let things go. The goal is longevity. It's not to build a big fire that burns out quickly. So remember, goal is longevity, not to build a big fire that burns out quickly. Now we're going to talk a little bit about making a calendar at the beginning of each busy season, intentionally block out family time, because your farm can get way too busy, especially with you working another off-farm job, that you can really forget about your family, which is your family's really important.
So it was about 2020 that I started feeling like we needed to be more intentional about making sure that we were spending enough time with our kids, not just in the garden and on the farm. So one of the things that I did start about the middle of 2020 was I sat down with a calendar and I would just block out a weekend every month. And we decided that we had to leave the farm, because spending a day at home means mom and dad see all of the things that need to be done, and it's not a break. And so this is something I've done every year since. I sit down very early in the season and block out the weekends, and we stick to it. I've often had the conversation, well, maybe we should just skip it this weekend, but we don't. And that really has been the best thing for us, to make sure that, you know, we're making memories with our kids that are not just attached to the farm. It also helps us to, I think, just relax a little bit when we're not looking at the problems, and to recharge and come back excited to keep going. So this is probably one of the best pieces of advice we can give you, is to do that first. Block out that family time.
So we learn to do a little bit every day without feeling like you have to get it done right now. Plan a time to stop every single evening and stick to those times. We usually plan 5 or 6 in the evening that we're going to stop. We're going to take the kids down to the beach, which isn't too far from us, or we're going to build Legos with them or whatever. Now, there's the times that you're in harvest or planting that you have to go past those times. And we understand that, and that happens to us too. But try the majority of time. To be, if it can wait till tomorrow at 6 o'clock, let it wait and make sure to spend that time with family. We also stick to our summer and winter priorities. For example, any improvements or remodels that are done at the house are done between November and April. We're actually, so with our house, we're trying to finish our basement, and we had the lights ready to go, and then it was like May, and we're like, we're done, sorry. And the lights still need to go in. But we separate those priorities, unless it's like an emergent maintenance thing. And we also plan lots of family time in the winter. We're a big ski area, snowshoeing area, so we try to get a lot of family time in the winter as well.
So after we made all of these cutbacks, we started refocusing our attention on the things that we were already doing on the farm. We worked on rebranding and on improving and refining our value-added products. So we started our farm with this garlic head as our logo, and we had a friend who's a very talented artist that drew it. But one of the things that we learned was that a pencil drawing does not make a good logo, because when you try to digitize it and blow it up, it's very grainy. And we had also had comments from a friend, a customer, who had works in marketing, who said, you know, you guys aren't just growing garlic anymore, so you might want to change your logo a little bit to include more of what you're doing. So we work on a new logo. And this is, if you've ever done this, this is not necessarily a straightforward task. We went through a lot of trial and error attempts. These are rough sketches, not that we were intending to use them. In order to try and capture the heart of our farm and what we felt like summed up our mission. And what we learned is that using a tattoo artist actually makes this process a lot easier. Because the thing that's unique about tattoo artists is that many of them do digital drawings. And so we were able to get a hand-sketched but still digital logo. And because it's a digital drawing, we can lift the pieces from the logo and change the color of them as well. And then we can use the pieces of the logo to design our labels. If you are not familiar with Canva and you want to do anything with marketing, look it up. There's a free version and there is a paid version. And it has been an invaluable tool for us. I design all of our labels on there. I design any marketing material, everything, and this presentation, all on Canva. So I created new labels, we added some products, worked on rebranding, doing pictures of products, using a higher quality label, better jars, learned how to shrink wrap. If you're interested in any of those resources, we have everything. I'll show you at the end of the presentation how to get to it. We also worked on creative ways to improve our products or to change up the things we were already doing and sell them in different ways. So we had done some soft net garlic that ended up being in the varieties that we culled out when we threw out half the crop, because soft net garlic prefers a warmer climate. And we had tried for several years and just could never get a good crop of soft net garlic. So we quit because it didn't make sense. But customers wanted garlic braids still. So this was kind of the compromise that I came up with. So I just started growing flowers and drying the flowers and putting them into the garlic braids. And these sell really well. So I tell my customers, you can hang this up in your house, enjoy it for 9 or 10 months, and then in the spring, before the garlic goes bad, just cut it out, use the garlic, compost the rest. And these have just gone over so well. We'll be making a lot more of them next year. We also added, so we live in an area that is mostly tourists, and so we added bags with a stamp for our logo and just anything we could do to really, I guess, tighten our branding, make our products look good, and also put together gift boxes with a collection of seasonings, trying to increase revenue by selling more things at a time.
So we continue to focus on our farmers market display and continue to find better ways to display our products. This is 2019, 2023. And even in for next year, we're going to be using more of a fitted tablecloth, going back not to this, but to a more green fitted tablecloth to make it look even better. So, and another thing, bring your kids to market, right? If you have kids, bring your kids to market. When we only did one market, we all came as a family. We didn't all need to, but we all came as a family every Friday to market. Now, Gavin is the spotlight. That's Charlevoix Farmers Market. That's our best market. He's the spotlight there. It's terrible, but I don't even know where he's at half the time. But he's with the market master usually. So, always running around. So, intentional experimentation. So, if we do experiments, they're much more focused and intentional now. I began experimenting with shiitake mushrooms. So we have a small maple forest that I do some backyard maple syrup with. And a lot of the maple trees, the smaller maple trees, will grow up in bunches or really close together. And to call some of them out so that a tree can really flourish and grow larger is what you want to do in that forest. So I'll cut live maple trees in the winter, and then I inoculate shiitake mushrooms. And if you went to the mushroom class That guy was awesome. Look up his name and find him later when it's on Audioverse. But he talks about inoculating shiitake mushroom logs and actually using Field & Forest, which is the same company we use for the sawdust spun. So after 12 months, we inoculate in April. This is 12 months, over 12 months later, actually, this is June, where I would dump the logs in actually an old canoe that we found on the side of the road that was busted but still held water. We'd fill it with water, dunk it for 24 hours, stand them up, and this is a week later after dunking them. So we experimented this last summer. We sold a few, but we experimented with how to do pest control, how to really keep a good production of shiitake mushrooms. And in the spring before the summer too, we inoculated some more. So we also brought microgreens into one of our three markets. Now, that experimentation that I did in 2015-16, this really helped me learn how to grow microgreens. And what I do is I make my own mixes, but I make one spicy mix and I make one regular mix, and that's it. I don't do anything special with my microgreens. The reason I started selling microgreens is because our best market, which is Charlevoix, our best market is going to give you the best spot if you show up at the first market in May. Well, in May, I don't have any products except for some seasonings. I don't have any fresh garlic, garlic scapes. Like, we don't have any of our dried garlic braids. It's like, what was I going to bring? I said, I'm going to do microgreens so I can get into market quick and get a really good spot. And it worked out really well. And so we just continued selling microgreens every market. And we sell about 10 flats every market in Charlevoix. Now, the other two markets that we do, there are other microgreen vendors. And because there are other microgreen vendors, we actually don't sell microgreens at those markets because it's just not worth it. And so we sell only at the one market. And as you'll see, 10 days after starting your microgreens, they're ready to go, and then we sell them at the market.
So I think something that's important to note is that just try things. Yeah, it will cost money to try things. But, you know, how much is college tuition to go learn something? You know, we can call this life tuition. Sometimes you just have to do the experiments to learn how to do things. So this is my favorite part. After all of this, we ask ourselves, how are we investing in the people around us? How are we contributing to our community? Since the beginning of our farm, it had always been kind of our dream and our intention. But if you're going to share a farm, you have to have a farm. And so we spent a few years just kind of figuring things out. And we finally got to not a perfect point, but a point where we felt like we had something to offer. Because we've been given so much. And this is a quote. This is from Katie Davis Majors in her book, Daring to Hope. And she says, "At the end of time, all that will count is that we lived the gospel with our very lives, that we paid attention to the people God gave us and dwelt knowledgeably and hospitably in the place to which he has called us." So I keep this quote hanging up on the side of my fridge, and it really helps me to remember what my responsibility is and that I was put in this place for a reason and that I am somewhat responsible for the people around me. And so in the spring of 2023, we opened up the farm. We have a 1,000 square foot house. We don't have a barn. We have two hoop houses. We have one bathroom. And we opened up our farm to the public to have shiitake mushroom classes. And I think we had 12 kids at that very first class. And it was great. It was about 2 hours. We taught them about mushrooms, and they went to see our mushrooms in the woods. And then they got to drill and inoculate their own mushroom logs to take home. And then in May, we did a three-week gardening class. And we had between 13 and 15 kids each week. It was a continuing class, so they came for every week. And then in the fall, we offered a 12-week nature school that met one morning a week. And so I was a teacher. So this is not completely outside of our realm. We weren't totally diving off the deep end. And for me, holding these classes is really what the farm is all about. My kids love it because they get to see their friends and they get to meet new friends because these are community kids that are coming to our class. None of them are Adventist. Most of them are not even Christians, but they're coming onto our farm and learning and doing these classes with us. And I love this. And it's really like such a privilege as fall turned into winter, because we ran nature school into November and December, which gets quite cold in northern Michigan. We would do school in, we just have in a farmer's friend hoop house, we moved picnic tables into the hoop house and did farm school in there. And then we would have a bonfire afterwards, and the parents would sit around the fire and visit while the kids just played in the woods.
So we found that in order to build community, you need to meet people where they are at. So we first decided that every fall we want to bring those on our road a gift from the farm. We hadn't met everybody on our road. A lot of them we hadn't. So this last fall, we brought some seasonings and some garlic and met our neighbors on the road. And then we also wanted to do something a little bit different. We wanted to do an opening day donation-based brunch that supported another nonprofit this fall. So opening day, if you're from the North, opening day of deer season is like 4th of July, okay? So these guys take their kids out of school, like it's a big deal. And so I said, you know what, I really want to do an opening day pancake brunch. I don't want to do it in the morning, that's when they're all hunting, but in the middle of the day when they want to grab lunch, I want them to know that they can come to the farm, get some free food, and it's totally free, and if they donate, 100% of it's going to go to this organization. And so I contacted this organization called Michigan Outdoor Wishmakers, who takes disabled people and veterans on hunts in Michigan. And I said, hey, you know, I got an idea of what they do. And I said, you know what, I want to do this brunch and I want everything to go to you guys. And he's, you know, they're like, cool, sweet. So we had only a few people, but we had people that we had never met before, or we had just met when we had brought gifts on the road. And we met some hunters we had never met before. And we brought in $260 for this organization, and it was small, but it was something to just get started, to really bring to our community. And people that came said, this has never happened. We've never seen anything like this before. This is super cool. So kind of meeting people where you're at, whether you're a hunter or not, like understanding what's important to the community and seeing how you can bring people to your farm and kind of witness to them through that.
And we actually had people stop by for days after, just saying, like, we think this is so cool what you did. We were sorry we couldn't make it. And they would make donations. So back to our slides, engage. So when we're talking about engaging, we have a serious focus on quality control. That's something that we pay a lot of attention to, is making sure that all of the products that we sell are top-notch, because we really want to keep that reputation of only having high-quality products. Once you have mastered some of the basics, so like with seasonings, we do 50% of our income comes from seasonings. And we have a pretty good, you know, we have jars and labels and shrink wrap, but we started in mason jars. So we had to kind of learn and develop a product. And so don't be afraid to start, and don't be upset about where you start. But then once you've mastered kind of the basics or figured it out, do what you can to improve it. Improving your marketing really matters. And then finding ways to give back to your community, not just because it's what we're supposed to do, but it also helps your business a lot. And never stop learning, experimenting, and growing. So I just wanted to throw this in here too. There's just a few ideas for how to make connections. And really the first one is be friendly. When you go out in town, talk to people, smile at people. And just be an inviting and welcoming person, and then find ways to get involved in your community. I cap my classes at 12 now, but I fill classes very quickly, and it's not because our farm is so amazing and people want to come see it. It's because the minute we moved to our community, I was going to library story time and meeting people. And I was helping with the volunteering at the 4-H fair. And it's because we've built connections with people, and they're not coming to a stranger's house or a farm that they've never heard of to take classes. They're coming to see a friend, or they're coming because of another friend recommended that they come. Another thing that has helped us is donating products for raffles and local charities. People call looking for things for, often it's for silent auction to fundraise for the school. Any way that you can put your name out there really is a blessing to you, and I don't want to minimize that, but also helps you build your business. And again, just talking to people, learning about them, learning about the things that they need. In our community, Northern Michigan, very rural, there's a huge homeschooling, there's a lot of homeschoolers. And so I started a homeschool networking night. And once a month, I advertise in town and on Facebook and at the library, and moms come and just talk about homeschool stuff. And that has been a great way to help support our community, and it also feeds the farm because I get a lot of kids that come to classes from that. Another thing we do is host Vespers on our farm, and then the classes. Did you want to talk about Vespers?
Oh, I was just going to say we have a lot of people come to Vespers, and a few of them don't even believe in God. Wow. They just like the stories and kind of the atmosphere and the songs, but they have told us, like, we really don't believe in God. We just enjoy coming. So to review, that's right, that's the hope, that's our hope, right? So to review, research, find what is missing and fill a need, visit farms, read books, talk to farmers, find out what works for you and with your work schedule, and then experiment. We started experimenting with garlic, with making different seasonings. Then we started experimenting with sheep, with chickens, with guardian dogs. Then we got rid of sheep, chickens, and guardian dogs. And you just need to find out what balance works with your work and your family, and then start refining your products. We rebranded. We bettered our website. We improved our processes and increased our sales. And during this time, we refocused. All right. So our goals kind of changed. We changed from a goal of farming to just pay for our homestead to a goal of we want to turn a profit past paying for the homestead to a goal of turning. And then we realized in 2023, although we still need to make a profit on the farm, our ultimate goal is to build a place where our community can gather together and find Jesus. So with a small house, and I want you guys, I don't know if it's going to go down, but with a small house, one bathroom, no garage, no pole barn, half our lawn is dirt, right? We just started. And so no matter, and honestly, last spring we started and I said, Melissa, we don't have this stuff. She's like, we're just going to start. And that was what we needed to do. And I think, you know, you just need to start no matter where you're at.
So I think the biggest thing that we want to leave you with is to make sure that you keep your priorities in the right order. We're called to seek first the kingdom of God. And so make sure that you're spending time asking yourself what you're doing, why you're doing it, what you're really trying to achieve. The question that I like to ask as we work really hard to grow our business and to grow the classes is, whose kingdom are you building? I will show you. Do you want to do questions? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the question was asked, how do we advertise for the Vespers that we hold? So we usually hold the Vespers on Saturday night, and they are open. It's our church, but we live in Central Lake, Michigan, and our church has about 10 people in it. So, yes, our church is there, and it is a church Vespers. But then I, over the years, have collected, I have about 50 phone numbers in a database of local families that, you know, come to classes and come to networking night. And so every time we're doing any kind of event, a class, a Vespers, I shoot a text out to that whole list of people and just say, hey, we're having a Vespers at this time. It's a potluck. Hope you can make it. And it's very informal. I don't even know half the time if I'm going to have 10 people or if I'm going to have 40.
Yeah. So, okay. So you asked, I am an ER nurse, and what are my work hours? So they're always changing, right? So last summer I was able to make sure I had Thursdays and Fridays off. And this year for part of the summer, actually in September, I was working night shift. So I was working night shift. I'd get off at 7 a.m. I'd go to market till 1, sleep a little bit, go back to work. Now that's not a good plan to usually do. But I organized it. So my manager is really good, and I organized it for this next season. to have every Thursday and Friday free. I work every other weekend, every other Saturday and Sunday in the emergency department, but I get every Thursday and Friday free. And so it's something with your job. Like, again, you have to look at what you do and what you can organize, but definitely asking, seeing how you can work it out. Because I told him, I said, I'll work every single Sunday if I can have Thursday, Friday free. I know I can't have every other Saturday free because they're...
And when you have someone working full time, it really is just, it's teamwork and kind of picking up the slack. So if he would work the night before, I would be responsible to load everything for market and meet him at market. Or sometimes I would meet him at market and he would go home with the kids and kind of try to nap, and I would do the market by myself. And so there really is a lot of that give and take, and you just have to work together. And sometimes there's really hard times, but you get through it.
One thing we realized too is we didn't have time to do three separate days of markets. So we said Thursday, Fridays are the only times we're going to do markets. And if we build from there, which our plan is to eventually to have a commercial kitchen, but we don't even have a commercial kitchen yet, is to build online sales or into store sales. So Fridays, we have two markets. So we invested in having another tent, and Melissa and I go opposite directions for those markets. And we ask the kids, who do you want to go with today?
So the question was asked how we get away when we have farmers markets on Fridays. So our Friday farmers market is 8 a.m. to noon. And then it's about 45, 50 minutes home from the market. And we get home and we only unpack what we have to. And usually I have spent the night before packing whatever we need for our trip. So we unpack, repack, and hit the road. I'll just show you guys real quick on our website where you can find information about, if I can find my cursor, where you find the information about what we use for our bottles and our labels and all of that. So this is our website. So it's hillsideharvestfarm.com. And okay, so on this tab over here under resources, so you can find, it's the very first one because it's the most recent presentation. These are the handouts from this presentation. And there's also a tab here for value added resources. So where we order our bottles, everything is on this link here.
So we very much believe in being open about like what we're how much we're making or where we're getting things from, how we're able to do it, how we're able to plant it. Because we figure if someone else can do it better than us, then we're just not doing it good enough. We're going to have to switch some things up. Like literally the only secret that we have is I'm not going to tell you the exact ratio of our seasonings. But that's it. So if you ask us any other question, I'll tell you what's in the seasoning. But if you ask us any other questions on anything, what the bottles are, like where we get the caps or whatever, that's all on here. And if you have any questions, please just shoot us an email and I'll answer them. Also for microgreens, which trays I use, what works, and I'll tell you the ratio for the mixes and all that stuff. Yes and no. So mostly. So for our Mel's blend, we grow our rosemary, thyme, oregano, hyssop, basil, garlic. We don't grow the pink salt. But the one thing that we don't grow is, so I do a habanero rub with our maple sugar. So I boil down maple syrup to a sugar, and we have a smoked paprika and a black pepper in there that I don't grow. But everything else is grown by us. Yeah. So we can't ship yet. And it's because we're under cottage food laws. So with dried seasonings, we can sell at farmer's market. But we aren't allowed, and we can sell online for local pickup, but we can't ship. So except for garlic. So we will ship some like fresh garlic. And we're planning on selling garlic braids on this website next year. But as far as seasonings, we have to get that commercial kitchen up and running, so my long-term goal is to be able to work as a nurse from end of September into beginning of May, and then just pick up shifts as I feel like it between May and August. And so if you can do contract nursing, which you can work at different hospitals. And so that's my eventual plan. Financially right now, it doesn't make sense. So that's why I'm still doing both. But that's my eventual goal. So our overall goal is to bring in, right now we bring in a revenue of $23,000, and our eventual goal is to bring in a revenue of $100,000, and then $50,000, is the profit. So that's our future goal. Right now it's just us. We have Some kids, so like 14 to 18 year olds, come and help us with planting, and we pay them $15 an hour. And then we also have like one kid come and help us with harvest occasionally, but that's the only people that come work on the farm.
How much time do you put in the farm per week?
Yeah, so
in the summer season.
I'd say when you're including the markets, it's about 25 hours. Yeah, per week.
And how many work hours?
36.
On the job.
36 on the job as a nurse.
36
plus about 25.
The thing about the crops that we've chosen to grow too is that there's a lot of work, very concentrated, and then there's not a lot to do. And then you'll find a ton and then not a lot. And so that has helped us to fit it into our lives. And that's why we say, like, choose what you're going to grow to fit your lifestyle.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So the question was asked, do we charge for classes or is it a free service? So this was our very first year offering classes, and we did the classes almost at cost. So we charged $10 a kid for the shiitake mushroom class. It probably cost us a little bit more to do it. Same with the gardening class. We charged $5 a week for the gardening class. And it covered, like, I have soil blockers for the kids, and they took home a little tray of seeds that they made or whatever little projects we did. It barely covered the cost. So we actually went down the whole rabbit hole of maybe starting a nonprofit to fund the classes, but decided that, you know, we were getting ahead of ourselves again. Maybe we're learning something. And so we did for this year really sit down and, like, we're looking at bringing on porta potties, because instead of doing one mushroom class, we have three planned. And instead of doing one gardening class, we have two planned. So we really started looking at, okay, we have our insurance overhead and have increased the prices. We'll be charging $30 a kid for the mushroom class. However, we don't want to turn kids away because they can't pay for it. And we do live in a more depressed community. And so we decided, without going the nonprofit route, that we're still going to ask for donations and ask people to sponsor kids through our classes. And we're going to see how that goes for a while. So it's all a big experiment still.
You charge for your co-op?
Yes, we do charge the co-op. I don't even remember what we charged, but again, it was like it covered materials and was not enough, almost covered materials. And so we will also be reevaluating that and upping the price. Because it was our first year, I felt comfortable just charging the cost of materials, and I let my families know that, because I didn't want to charge a lot and not really know what I was doing.
What we find a little bit with your community is that really giving at first is going to benefit the farm in the long run. I mean, it's really give, sell, right? So if you can do that, and you have to be careful with it, right? I mean, for our seasonings and our other products at market, like, we make a profit on that. And we were able to, with that profit, say, okay, we can start giving basically some classes and just doing them at cost almost. But we wanted to bring people and be able to serve our community in that way. And then we're slowly figuring out, you know, can we make a profit? And if we can't, fine, we're still going to serve our community in a certain way as long as we can afford to do that. Right. Yeah. So we grow our, you know, we grow our shiitake mushrooms. We have the microgreens just for one market. We do the dried flowers now with the garlic braids. And then we do the herbs for our seasonings. So, like, we have a lot of rosemary in the greenhouse that actually, it doesn't live outside we're like 5B, zone 5B. So we have to put it in insulation in the greenhouse in the winter. But we have rosemary and thyme, oregano, hyssop, basil, sage, and then our garlic. So we're really adding a lot of herbs. And then we have our garlic, and that's our biggest crops. We also have our own family garden, but it's not included in the farm cost.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you dry your herbs?
Yeah, that's exactly what we use. We use Nextcaliber dehydrator.
Yeah, so we're down to two. One of them broke, but it served its time. We are also this spring planning on buying one of the Cabela's commercial dehydrators, the bigger ones. So we're still experimenting with that. But yeah, we've been using just three, now two, of the Excaliburs with 10 trays. And the secret to good herb salt is to blend the herbs with the salt before you dry it, because the oils from the herbs infuse into the salt that way. So the question was asked if there's a difference between a commercial kitchen and a manufacturing quick kitchen. So I'm not an expert on this, but I believe it would probably be different from state to state. But there is, in Michigan, there's a service kitchen, which would be like what most churches have to be approved for. And you're not allowed to, technically not allowed to actually cook food in there. They're for warming food up and serving it. And then we have a commercial kitchen that is designed. I'm not sure the proper terms, but there's a kitchen that's designed for immediate food service. So you'd be looking at restaurants and food trucks. And then I believe there's a different certification. And in Michigan, it's called a commercial kitchen for what we would be doing, like preparing products to sell like this. Yes, we would be able to ship across the state then. So in Michigan, we work under cottage food laws, and cottage food laws are different in every state. So you need to, if you're selling products like this, know what is the law in your state. But for us, there's requirements for how we do our labeling as it's processed in a home kitchen. And then there's a cap of how much income we're allowed to make if we're not in a commercial kitchen, and we are only allowed to do in-person sales, which means we can't sell online and we can't sell it to a store for them to sell it.
So for us, our commercial kitchen is actually going to be a shed that we purchased. It's coming on property in the spring, but we don't have the money to go ahead and make it in a commercial kitchen. So it's going to be a flour drying area for a while until we can do that. Well, what's required for our commercial kitchen is washable ceiling and walls and floor, a 3-bay sink, a mop sink, a wash sink, and then the bathroom has to be somewhat close. And our food inspector said it can be in our house because it's close enough to our house. It's really talking to your local food inspector and making sure that you're following all the guidelines with them, and then you can figure out what you need for that. So we brought one. So we have one Mel's blend that you can definitely like pour on your hand and taste. Yeah, and so that's our herb salt blend. And so basically it's our blend to take the place of your kitchen table salt. It's like a veggie salt kind of deal that I don't know if that's around anymore, but just adds a ton of flavor and people really, really like it. So yeah, take pictures of it. Take pictures of the ingredients. Just remember that to make it the best you can is taking the herbs fresh and grinding them with the salt and dehydrating them all together. That's where you get your gain.
That's a hard question to answer. I feel like so many tasks just kind of weave into themselves. I'm probably, if dad's home, working with dad. And then there are times that, like during harvest, there's a local teenager that comes and she works with me. And we will put in 8-hour days. Maddie and I will put in 8-hour days several times. So I would probably average out to, what did you say, 20 hours a week? And a few times it would be a little more than that, maybe 30.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And if you have any more questions, feel free to come right up and ask.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.